Coffee with Cudmore.
Light 104.7 and 1570 AM. WVTL.
Dr. Lou Koster, he's a family doctor. He's on the line with us from Australia. Good morning, Dr. Koster.
Good morning, Bob. Really wonderful for you to have me on your show. I've been watching your show, been listening to your show a few times, and I really, really love the work that you're doing. And of course, I love the fact that that your station is based in Amsterdam, which is close to my hometown in the Netherlands.
Yeah, you're from the Netherlands, right? Yeah,
that's
in fact,
right, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, it's another story, but these filmmakers have been through here doing a story about all the places in the world. I think there's 11 or 12 of them that were named after your Amsterdam in the Netherlands.
Yes, 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 absolutely. And, of course, New York has got that background as
yes.
well.
Now, yes. Dr. Koster is author of a book called Language for Life from the Netherlands, lives in Australia. He's had a lot of interesting experiences, and I'd like to talk to them about that. As a medical doctor, you've worked with an organization called Doctors Without Borders. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, Bob, of course. Well, that is an organization that exists now for, I think, over 20 years or so. It is a fantastic organization. When I was a medical student, at some point, I had a little bit of a hiccup in my studies. I decided to do something else, and I traveled a bit, and then I met a few people who, well, there was a person who I met and told me about this fantastic organization called Doctors Without Borders, and I thought, wow, isn't that great that you can make a difference with all these studies that I've been doing, with the possibility of working in countries and with people where medicine really, really is needed. And so, like at a young age, I took the decision to complete all my medical studies and to work for that organization. So that is what I've been doing for about 10 years, well, not just with Doctors Without Borders, but also with other organizations that are doing similar work, like the Red Cross and World Vision. And that was just an absolutely amazing, contributing
Where have you gone?
Experience.
What countries have you gone to?
Yes. I worked in Angola for the International Committee of the Red Cross, and that was a surgical unit that took care of people, in particular women as well, unfortunately, who stepped on mines at that time. That country is, and still is, devastated by mines. That is just a horrible thing that is that was part of that civil war at that time. And so we were there and took care of people who had infectious diseases and who were wounded by the war at the time. And so that was where I was for about 7 months. I worked in Liberia for Doctors Without Borders. That was also during the Civil War.
Yes.
In the south of the Sudan, and in Pakistan in refugee camps of the Afghan refugees who were located there, and that was just after the Civil War in Afghanistan when the Russians were there.
Mm. So, I mean, in all these places you speak of with great danger and so forth, you make the point of saying that you were happy doing this. I mean, even though it was dangerous.
Happy is not entirely the right word, but happy, I mean, I would not call it happy, but I would call it more, I made the most out of it. Of course, that is to say that when you are in a situation like that, there's not a lot of room to dwell on either yourself or on what is happening, since there are so many things to do and the priorities, they are pertinent. But definitely, I was coming from a place, or I learned to come from a place where I was, I felt at peace with what I was doing. You may call it happiness, but a sense of that I was doing the right thing, I was making a difference, and then in that sense, I felt fulfilled in what I was doing.
Yes. Now, but in these places, you had, you know, there were things that happened to you.
Yes.
You were kidnapped at gunpoint?
Yes.
Where was that?
Okay. That was in Liberia, the country that I just mentioned. It was kind of like an odd situation. We were driving. Well, that was to say that I was not driving, since you have someone then who drives, because that's more secure if you have someone who is local, who guides you around. So we were driving on a road going to a clinic, and we were passing a convoy, and suddenly there was a car who fought us and gave directions that we had to stop the car, and we were taken out of the car, and I was in fact smashed against the road by a soldier, and he put his boot on my face while my head was on the road and a gun, and so, well, what I'm about to say that may sound odd, but actually, I was not afraid. I said to the soldier, and I won't repeat the language that I used, but I said that he needed to get off me and bring me to his leader. Since I said, you know, we are here to make a difference, to serve your people, and you bring me to your leader, and well, that's what you do. And so that's what he did, actually. And that leader, that was a person who was in the front of the convoy, and it was a man who was dressed in a white suit, and that man was Charles Taylor.
Charles.
And the same man who is convicted, or who was convicted, I think, a month ago or so, for war crimes. And he looked at me, and then he shook my hands and said, well, okay, now I know who you are. Thank you for being here and for making a difference for our people, and you let me go. Wow. So that was that experience, yes.
And in Liberia, I don't know, and I know a squat about Liberia, except I did know a woman from there I used to talk to years ago when these troubles were erupting. And I gathered that soldier that had his boot on your face, I mean, they were very young, right? They get the age. Go ahead.
Yes, exactly. That was just an experience of. Like a bit surreal. They were just children. I mean, like a lot of soldiers, what you call soldiers. When we say soldier, we have a picture of a soldier, but they were young children, and they were like children. They were playful, and they had a big gun in their hands. So that was not a good combination. So a few times when we passed a checkpoint, and the checkpoint was occupied by these kind of soldier children. it was very important to be very respectful, not to provoke or to do something silly, because you would never know.
Yeah,
it was completely unpredictable.
Dr. Luke Koster is with us. His book called Language for Life. Another tale I'm told is that you survived a plane hijacking.
Yes, well, that is accurate. That was my first mission. Well, so that is how I call the mission or work, where you then fly out to a country from the place where the organization was based. And that was on a flight between Quetta, between Karachi and Quetta, so that is in Pakistan. And I was sitting in the back of the plane, just a passenger, like anybody else. And at some point, I saw some movement in front of the plane. That is to say, the stewardess was making rapid movements, and I thought, oh, well, there must be something going on. Maybe someone is not well. So I thought, have a look to see if I could offer my services. So I just walked up to the front of the plane, and I passed the curtain, which is the dividing between the passengers and the cabin of the stewardesses. And I said, is there a problem? And then what I saw was that there was a man sitting who held a gun, and he was wounded. And I said to the stewardess, well, is this a hijack? And she said, yes. And I said, is this the hijacker? And I pointed to this man who had a gun and who was wounded. And what I thought that she said was yes, but and I took the gun from his hand and put it on the floor, and I gave him first aid. And then what I realized was that he was the security guard who was shot by the hijacker, who was laying dead on the floor in that cabin where there's the catering. So this just an amazing. I mean, what is amazing about an experience like that is that you move from a situation where you have a sense of normality. You are just sitting in a plane, and then something happens, and you can't sort out exactly what it is, and then you step into that reality, which is just an astounding experience. Yes.
My goodness. Well, Dr. Koster, we're almost out of time, but again,
okay.
The book is called Language for Life. Dr. Lewis Koster, he's now in Australia after working as a medical doctor in various, I guess you'd say, trouble spots around the world. He's a native of Holland. Is there anything you want to tell us about your book or how it's available or anything of that nature?
Yes. So the book is called A New Language for Life, Words That Make You Rich, Words That Keep You Poor. Now, since we don't have a lot of time, but basically the book is about the way we view ourselves determines our happiness. So what I'm saying with this is that that's also part of my experiences, is that we are not defined by our circumstances. In fact, we are much more than how we define ourselves. And there are a few things that I can share about it, but I don't know if we have enough time for that. I think it's a great book. I think it's very exciting to be able to share another possibility. Something that gives people or the reader an opportunity to look beyond their circumstances and to realize that they are much more than what they think they are or how they define themselves. Like if you have a financial breakdown, that you are not the breakdown the moment you say, oh, I am now doomed or I can't move forward. Mm-hmm. That is what actually keeps you stuck, but you are much more than that. And when you see yourself in another way, much bigger than your circumstances, then something else is possible. Now, basically, that is the message of the
book. Sure. Dr. Koster, I thank you very much. This is a fascinating conversation. The website, if you want to go to it, is A New Language for Life, newlanguageforlife.com. Dr. Lewis Koster in Australia, thanks for being with us. You have a good day.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob, and thank you for having me on your show. I really, really appreciate it.
Take care.